This is Inside Open Wheel with your host, Jeremy Scott.
From the Jericho Multimedia Studios just outside Chicago, this is Inside Open Wheel. Hello, everybody. I'm Jeremy Scott. Please, you can join us on this latest episode. It's a very packed episode as well. Scott Blend is the newest owner in the Road to Indy. He is the new owner of Ignite Autosport with Cape Motorsport. He'll be stopping by to talk about how he got involved and basically what he does, because it's a really interesting story how he got started out. Braden Eaves then stops by to join us. At the time of recording, he was running second in the TireRack.com Road to Indy E-Series. We know how that plays out. We'll tell you about that in just a little bit. Also, Phil Krause joins us, the latest winner in the Coca-Cola Bottling Company of Kokomo Indy Elite Series. And we talk about his win in the Catalyst 317-400 at Pocono Speedway. Then finally, Graham Rahal joins us, talk about IndyCar and all sorts of other things as well. So you can call us on our Google voicemail, 815-714-9260. Email us, insideopenwheel@gmail.com. Drop us a line on Facebook or Twitter. Also, if you haven't listened, we were actually name dropped in the Midwestern Council bi-weekly, I apologize, podcast. So check those guys out as well. Pretty neat thing that they're doing there for club racing here in the Midwest. Now, Charlie Ante stepping aside this week. He's got some more sim racing to do. We'll have him back on next week for sure. And mention that sim race that happened over the past couple of days. Well, Max Esterson is your winner there of the... TireRack.com E-Series. He basically won it in the first race at Mid-Ohio, and Esterson going over to run in the Formula Ford UK with Low Dempsey Racing. We'll talk more about that. Hopefully have him on before he ships off overseas. A lot of news coming out as well. A lot of driver announcements. We'll go over those later on to next week. But the big story I want to talk about real quick: J. Howard Driver Development adds another rung to their ladder in the Road to Indy series. So now they basically, if there's a support series, a development series, you can bet that they're in it right now as J. Howard Driver Development expands into Indy Pro 2000. They'll be bringing on Christian Rasmussen. He'll be moving up as he's last year's USF 2000 champion, and Wyatt Briacek, both really quick in preseason testing, according to the press release sent to us by J. Howard Driver Development. So it's going to be interesting to see that now J. Howard has a farm system, per se, to bring drivers up into the IndyCar series. Be interesting to see if he continues his partnership with Carlin in the next couple of years to get to IndyCar, or if he decides to branch out and start his own team, which would be the most ideal situation. I would love to see it, to be honest with you. Also making news, the new lights halo came about, and we saw pictures of it floating around the internet, and it's interesting to say the least. While I'm glad that they're looking at safety, it makes me wonder how the bolts came about, because we know that the IndyCar one, that's attached to the monocoque properly, whereas this one is bolted on. I know the next generation is going to be more of a seamless transition for the halo or the windscreen, whatever they decide to use. However, I hope that this works. I really do. So we'll see what happens. Oh, I will say this one thing about driver announcements. Remember when Tim Neff came on the show a couple weeks ago for TJ Speed and said, hey, we might have we have three cars, we might have a fourth one? There's going to be a fourth driver announced down the line for TJ Speed. We'll see what happens with that. But a lot of driver announcements. Again, we'll mention those a little bit later on. But the biggest one we do know is that Max Chilton did announce that he will be running the road and street course as well as the Indianapolis 500 with Carlin Racing in the NTT IndyCar Series. No word yet on who the oval driver is, but my guess is it's going to be Connor Daly once again. We know how well that he gelled with the team last year, winning the pole for one of the races in Iowa. Coming up next on Inside Open Wheel is the winner of the Catalyst 317 400 at Pocono Raceway last Sunday night for the Coca-Cola Bottling Company Kokomo Indy Elite Series, Phil Krause.
This is Inside Open Wheel with Jeremy Scott.
Well, it is the week after a Coca-Cola Bottling Company Kokomo Indy Elite Series race. And with that, we talk about how bad Charlie's doing once again. No, I'm kidding. We'll talk about that much later on.
I don't think your show's long enough for that.
The show's not long enough for that. But we need to have a show where Charlie learns what a weight jacker is and what a weight jacker does. Maybe we should get Sam Hornish Jr. on. Maybe he could tell you
this. I know what it is and what it does. Somebody just installed it the wrong way on my car.
Yeah, driver excuses. I'm used to this. So anyway, we go to the real race winner. This is why Charlie's a driver analyst, because he can't. Never mind. I'm not going to go down that road.
Can he analyze the drivers if he's always crashing?
That's the voice of Phil Krause. He is the latest winner in the Coca-Cola Kokomo Indy Elite Series. And I've got to say,
welcome to the show, Phil. Make yourself comfortable.
I'm just catching the vibe.
Phil's been listening a little bit, so that's good. That's good. We have a long-time listener, first-time caller. Oh, this is great. All right. So here's my question. It seems that this year that it's the driver who dominates the race that ends up winning the race. So some would say it's a stink show, but I have to say it's interesting that we're seeing this pattern so far early in the series.
Oh, yeah, definitely. It really boils down to the new build and how the car reacts in dirty air compared to last build and how the tire reacts in dirty air. Because this build, it's a bit harder to follow. So once you're out front, it's a lot harder to get past the leader than it used to be. But obviously, it might be a little bit of a stink show up front, but in the pack, there's still a ton of good racing.
Yeah, there's a ton of good racing at the back. It's just, you know, even when you're in clean air near the back of the pack, you still spin and hit the wall, Charlie.
Yeah, that weight jacker is a tricky thing, too. We've got to keep an eye out for that.
We're going to call Sam Hornish Jr. so he can teach you how to use that weight jacker, the king of the weight jackers.
I'll take that.
But I've got to say this. It was interesting seeing some newer names up at the front with Pawlewski leading a couple of laps. Henry Bennett had a good showing. Kinsella not too bad. But the one thing that really shocked me is in 12th place, Andreas Eick. Normally we see him at the front, but the championship contenders had so many problems throughout the race. Charlie, I know you and I got to see a little bit of the race after your little incident. So, So tell me your thoughts on it.
Well, when you bring up Andreas, I think it's really interesting because our team, I think, had a really good setup.
Yeah.
I qualified 12th before they applied my penalty. So, that should tell you something about how good it is or was. Andreas is the best driver on our team. So for him to struggle like that when we have such a good setup, maybe it just didn't agree with him. So I don't know. That's a good question. From my perspective, to give the listeners some detail about how my race went, if they care about the guy that was running in 25th place, I started last or near last because of my penalty from contact in Texas, and I was just trying to work my way up towards the front. It's a long race, so I was trying to be patient, and I was playing with the weight jacker. I think I was up to like plus six out of 20. And then the car coming out of three got a little bit loose. I was able to save it and it wasn't too bad, but I backed it down to four. And then coming out of one, the same thing happened and I couldn't hold it and I hit the wall. And so as I was, you know, sliding down the back straightaway, I was talking to my team. I was like, yeah, the car started getting loose. I lost it in one. And so one of my teammates said, oh, where's the weight jacker? And I was like, well, it's plus four. And I was like, oh, you were supposed to go negative on that. And so that's what happened to me.
All righty. Well, this is coming from a driver who's never really had to worry about a weight jacker before. So,
yeah, it's not something that I really spend much. I'm a road racer. That's all this oval stuff is new to me.
Oh, well, that's things we love to hear. Road racers, let's go.
yeah. It, Yeah, because I was watching the race, and all of a sudden I hear first yell. Okay, it's Charles Ante. All right, whatever. I'm done.
I think you sent me the nice job text like before my car stopped sliding.
I did. Yes, I saw that. I'm like, I've got to give him some hell there. So,
you know, usually they'd say consistency is key, but not when you're wrecking each race.
Well, you know, that's like I was saying in Texas when Andreas was running up front and. The rest of us were in the back. I was like, we got the field surrounded, so we're in a good spot. I may be in the back, but I've got you all right where I can see you. So,
just remember that when you try and put him a lap down, though, he will. Never mind. I'll put himself in the wall before he puts you in the wall. Anyway, so 6 leaders, 15 lead changes, 3 cautions for 9 laps. Obviously, one of those was the Charlie Ante incident. But I've got to say, here's what I find interesting. Before Charlie's crash, there were a couple of drivers who came off of turn 3 and hit the attenuator pretty hard there, and then another one hit the pit wall. So it's interesting that we didn't see yellow for that, but I know why we saw the yellow for Charlie, because his car obviously, you know, all over the place, so we need to, you know, clean the track up. Phil, let's talk about this new setup. I saw a lot of guys would either white wall it out of 3, or they'd hit it hard. Some would come out okay, but others would just see the fate of the attenuators.
Yeah, I wouldn't say it was really a good outcome from hitting the wall out of 3, obviously.
Oh, no.
You're in an open wheel car, so hitting anything's usually not really, you know, optimal. But yeah, it's a really tricky track with the way you have to set up the car to be fast. Turn 3 is a real danger zone, because if you're running like an alt line to somebody else, and say they're running like the top and you're running the bottom, but they chop down on exit because they're trying to get clean air on their nose, they just plaster your nose in dirty air. And because you have your weight jacket set up to be running that clean air a little bit, you just kind of rocket up the track, smash the wall down, and your race is over before you even know it, really.
Now, for those who are listening and don't understand what a weight jacker does, Phil, can you talk to us about how the weight jacker helps you throughout the run?
Hold on, let me get my notebook.
I forgot to tell you, Charlie, you might want to write this down, though. I will have a recording for you after this is over.
All right, just for you, Charlie, so you can take your notes. Basically, what a weight jacker does is it's a tool that helps control the right rear ride height of the car. Obviously, you can go plus 20 or negative 20 off. That's the range on it. So you have a 40-click range on the weight jacker. And usually, if you're feeling the right rear tire slide out a little bit, you want to go down on it. But if you feel the right rear... If you feel the right front pushing, you want to go up on it. But obviously, Charlie, he went a bit too high on it when he felt the right front pushing. And when you do that, it doesn't really end too well.
Well,
it was
a known issue, because the guys, I mean, now that I have the experience, they were saying in warm up they were talking about going down on the weight jacker, and now I realize that that's why they were talking about that. So it's just the setup was designed to evolve into an oversteer. And I just didn't know that.
Yeah, we basically had the same thing. I think at the end of a run, if I was in clean air the whole time, I was in like negative 13 by the end of a run. So mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I was able to keep up with it. Otherwise, you were spinning.
Yeah, I probably would have ended up like that too.
So that was...
if I'd known what I was doing.
That's the key right there. I'm glad you finally said that. I've been trying to tell you that for years. Never mind. I don't know what I'm doing. That's why I'm sitting here talking into the microphone. So, lap 15 was the first yellow. That's where Charlie looped it off of turn 1, and he did it all on his own. The field will pit under yellow. Points leader Chris DeMeritt also got caught up in another yellow. That's lap 34. It seems like, Charlie, that Chris is either really good or he just can't find that horseshoe.
I wasn't really focusing on him too much. So I'm not sure exactly what happened to him.
So that was the big one. I'm going to call it the big one, because he tried to go high and ended up in the wall from a car that got loose. It was Liam Quinn. They were battling for 11th place. Made contact, and thankfully it wasn't on lap 1 like some drivers do at Pocono, and the reason why we don't go there anymore. But your teammate Andrew Wood had some good showing throughout the race as well, Charlie.
Yeah, I was watching him. Where did he finish in the top 5, right?
Let me see here. I just saw it. 17th. First car, one lap down.
Oh,
he got such high hopes for him as well.
Yeah,
to be fair, he was running up there the whole race, but I think he missed out on the fuel strat, and he had to make the extra stop at the end along with Andrew.
Yeah, I noticed a lot of drivers had that were trying to get for that fuel stop, and yeah, he was one of them that didn't get that. And
I think he's usually pretty strong at Pocono.
Yeah. So it was three, as I said, three L's, third one on lap 63. Rest of the race went green. Matt Pulaski came out of nowhere. Phil, did it seem like that Matt was going to, maybe if there was like a lap or two more, that he had your number, or were you just set up on setup that you wouldn't have to worry about it too much?
I mean, I'd be lying if I didn't see him coming. I had a bit of a Code Brown moment because I'm like, oh God, I really need this win. Please go away. Because over the last 50 laps of that race, he caught me by like 6 seconds. So I don't think I really had anything for him if he got close enough. So I think if there were five more laps, he definitely would have had me, unless I did some very aggressive weaving on him. But I don't think I'd want to do that, because obviously winning's cool and all, but you don't want to crash your car on like the last lap of the race either.
Well, that's how you go home. So, you go big or go home. So I look at it, but that's just me. But then again, I don't have an iRace car. 33 laps, 160 laps, 33 cars. I've been drinking too much. Sorry, people. Three cautions, nine laps, 15 lead changes. Fastest lap was a 41.169 on Andrew Kinsella. Take a look at your top 10 real quick. Phil Kraus, Matt Pulaski, Henry Bennett, Wilson Edo, Chris Stoffer, your top five. Tanner Watkins, Ray Kingsbury, Joe Branch with a good showing in eighth. Tony Show in a ninth, David Adams in 10th. When you take a look at the point standings, they are shaking up just a little bit. Andreas Syk, no wins, but he's still your points leader with 207. Phil Kraus tied with that win with 207. Chris DeMeritt falls down to third. Kinsella fourth. Ray Kingsbury in fifth. All right, Phil, I've got to ask. Rest of the season actually doesn't look too bad, but you guys are going to your first street course race here in a couple weeks.
Honestly, this is probably one of the races I'm looking forward to the most, because as I hinted to earlier, I'm a big road guy. But I actually joined this, started driving this car to do primarily, but obviously, Ray gave me a little invite to join this league, and I was like, yeah, screw it, why not? It looks fun. Hopped in, had a bit of fun, and now I'm doing the ovals as well, but the road course is probably my strongest point. I'm not as strong as an Adam Blocker, but I'm looking forward to it for sure.
Yeah, it's interesting to see, someone like Chris DeMeritt, who's really strong on ovals, and it seems like when it comes to road courses, I'm going to kind of call it Pocono road course, because it's got three different turns with, three different characteristics, and you're going left three times, but still, it's tough to set up for it. Charlie, have you had a chance to drive the Belle Isle course on iRacing yet?
Oh, yeah, plenty of times.
Okay, what are your thoughts on it?
It's very bumpy.
Okay.
It's kind of like, it's another island circuit, a little bit like Montreal.
Right.
It's a little bit tighter than Montreal, but I think it's somewhat comparable. It's bumpier and it's a little
much
bit
bumpier.
Yeah, much bumpier. But I enjoy driving on it. I'm looking forward to the race. I think there's going to be a lot of attrition, because it's so tight and bumpy. Obviously mechanical problems aren't going to be an issue, but, people just making mistakes, people hitting the bumps wrong or just, being an inch or two offline and stuffing it in the wall. I think that's, the people in this league are really good, but I think that's still going to have a high percentage.
I've got to say, if I'm looking at the track map right now, and I've been to Belle Isle a couple of times, a very beautiful facility. If you have not gone there, I would recommend getting a chance to go. So, Here are my trouble spots ahead of time. You got turn 3, turn 5, turn 7, and I'm even going to say turn 13 might catch some guys out. Because 13, it's one of those ones where you may have to get off the gas just a little bit, even though it looks like a kink. Someone's going to go fast on the end of a run.
Which one are you talking about? I'm looking at the track map now.
Okay, turn 13.
Turn 13?
Yeah.
Turn 13 is a fairly decently sized lift in the IndyCar.
Okay.
I think so. And turn 14 is an easy flat.
Yeah, 14 I'm not worried about because that's the one coming onto the pit straight.
Yeah, 13 I don't think is anywhere close to flat.
Oh, Phil, get your thoughts on Belle Isle.
I say I'm a road guy, but I haven't actually driven the track yet, so I'm cautiously optimistic about
and
it.
I just put hot money on you. Seriously? How am I going to eat this week?
even without driving it, I'm probably gonna start driving it like a few days from now. But I'm really looking forward to it. I've watched a few laps of it, and going back to the trouble spots. Honestly, if I had to pick them, I'd probably go with turns 1, 2, and 3. They're all pretty big because 1 and 2, obviously, you need that huge commitment, and if you want to be fast there, you gotta get really close up to the walls. And when you get up really close to the walls, obviously there's a pretty big chance that you might bonk a car on a wall, and that's not going to end too well. Turn 3, it's going to be your primary overtaking zone, so that's why that's a bit of a trouble zone.
Well, remember, in turn 2, you've got that ridge right there at the exit, so that's going to upset the car as you're trying to set it up for that straightaway.
And the one that likes to eat Corvettes.
I wasn't going to go there. I was going to be nice to you this time, so don't watch Mark Royce's lap. So that's all I'm going to say.
His car bends kind of scary.
Yeah. You know, here I really feel bad for him, but I'm glad GM promoted him to, you know, higher up. So
it all
I don't feel
out
too
him.
Bad for him. Isn't he like one of the chief officers? Yeah.
His office is a little bit higher in Renaissance Tower than it was last when he was the base car driver.
Yeah, I'm not going to shed any tears for him.
No, I'm not.
Sounds like he needs to crash more cars. It worked out for him this time. Why not do it again?
You know, and here's the thing, too. I think I heard he's a track day enthusiast, too, so...
I heard that he was actually, like, a fairly accomplished SCCA racer.
I think so, yeah. I have to, you know, I should go back and look at that. But anyway, Phil Krause, thanks for joining us. And, hey, good luck at Detroit. We'll chat with you soon.
No, thank you a ton.
And coming up next on Inside Open Wheel is Scott Blend. He is one of the newest owners in the Road to Indy and USF 2000 with Ignite Autosport.
This is Inside Open Wheel with Jeremy Scott.
A lot of people around the Midwest know about Marque. They know about Ignite, but the new team has come out of St. Louis, Ignite Autosport. And the team owner with that is Scott Blend. He is a St. Louis businessman who also is a kart racer. We'll talk a little bit about that. But the two-car team will have Evan Stommer and Spike Kohlbecker, who, as you remember, we've had Spike on our show. He was a hot shoe in F4, Evan Stommer. If you've been following karting in the Midwest, he is also a very fast driver. And really, I can't think of two better drivers who get a chance to run in USF 2000. Scott Blend joins us. Scott, thanks for joining us on Inside Open Wheel. This was a monumental announcement, first of all, because you have two drivers that you picked on talent. You didn't need to worry; they don't need to worry about money, and you guys paired with one of the best teams in USF 2000.
That's right. It is. It's a great deal. It's a great deal for the kids, and you know what? It's a great deal for us. It's a good thing for the community, and to have this St. Louis-based team with these young drivers, an opportunity to truly. Make it to the next level without that normal burden.
And it's a win-win for everybody because not only do you have two talents who, you know, they're working their way up the open wheel ladder regardless, but it also is a cross-promotion with Marque and the Ignite chassis that shows that, hey, these two started on this, why can't you?
That's right. I think that Keith Freeber from Marque has done such a fantastic job building that Ignite class in karting. It's a spec class, which really helps showcase the driver's talents versus it being, you know, part of the kart. So in continuation with that, again, USF 2000, another spec series, it's that progression. And looking forward, I think it's we use the Ignite series as a farm club for our USF 2000 team. And you're right. I think it just works. It fits. And we really got some good drivers. And as you mentioned, Spike, heck of a driver, proven winner, both here in the U.S. and in Europe and New Zealand, in fact. And then, of course, you have Evan, who has been a real standout in the karting world and has won quite a bit in some of the best tracks here in the U.S.
And you're a racer yourself. You've actually are a part of the Ignite series that goes around the Midwest. Let's talk about how you got started.
Well, I tell the story. It's kind of funny. Kurt Francois, who owns the track here, the Worldwide Technologies Raceway here, he owns that. My buddies know that they put in a karting track. And they called, you know, started calling me a year or so ago and said, hey, you know, let's go over there and get some people and go race some go-karts. So we went over to that track, and I got to tell you, I was hooked. Now, I'm a racer. I've spent a lot of time in karts. I've spent a lot of time following racing. I lived in Europe for 5 years, and I followed Formula One very closely. And anyway, so we did make it over there and made it over to the track. You know, one, you know, stint, and I'm on the phone with Keith Freeber, and we're buying carts. And we immediately bought carts, and just because it was so fun and with no real intention of racing, but it didn't take long, and I was racing. I was in the Master Series and, you know, started out a little shaky, a little X on the back of the helmet, but now I'm getting to be more and more competitive. And, you know, this is where I kind of met Evan, and this is where I met Spike and his family. And, yeah, and so I'm hooked, and I'm now racing two classes and traveling around pulling a trailer and go-karts.
And thankfully, those trailers aren't too heavy, but you still, you know, talk us through what a typical race weekend would be like for those who are looking to get into karting.
Well, it is. It doesn't take a whole lot of time. I think leading up to the weekend is where I spend most of the time practicing and getting ready. But, you know, the weekends, you start in the morning, you know, reasonably early. You have a couple practice sessions, a qualifying session, and then you're racing. And you're normally racing by 12:30 or 1 o'clock. Now, some days, there's two races on the same day, some weekends, and you're out of there by 3:30, all said and done. So that's an Ignite series. And the following day, you might have a super comp, and you might be able to come back and run another race. So again, it starts in the morning, and one race day, you're out of there by noon, all the different classes said and done.
Scott Blind joins us on Inside Open Wheel, the team owner for Ignite Autosport. Let's talk about how the idea of this first came about. You and Keith were exchanging ideas, and then you, finally a light bulb popped in your head?
Well, yes. I had some conversations, as I mentioned. You know, I had spent some time with Spike's father and communicating with him, and he had done, he had kind of exhausted resources with racing to move Spike up. And that's when I learned that the way to progress in racing is not necessarily on talent alone. You need to bring a lot of funding and a lot of capital with you. And I thought that was a very unusual thing for a team to expect the highest and best talents to bring capital with them. You know, my mind tells me if you're building a team, you want to pick and choose your very best drivers that give you the best opportunity to win. And I did learn, I came back and spoke with Keith after talking to Todd Kohlbecker, and he confirmed that that's the way it is. And I also then went to Curtis Francois, owner of Worldwide Technologies Raceway, and we go back, and I was talking to him as well, and he said, yeah, it's that's how it works. And I thought, you know, maybe we could provide a vehicle for them to progress through by taking away that funding and truly give some of the best talents, just strictly the best talents, an opportunity to race. And that's when In getting with Keith, I told him I wanted to do that, and I think he might have thought that I was full of it. But we did pull it off. We spoke more about it, and I didn't lose the interest in doing it. Keith was super instrumental in getting it off the ground because he knows his way through the racing world so well that he was able to ferret out the best place for us to start. He's leading the team. He's taken the team manager position, and here we are. We're off and running.
And it's great to see that, obviously, because not many drivers have that opportunity afforded to them, especially on a startup team. But this is a great chance for these two drivers, Cole Becker and Stommer, to start making their way through the Road to Indy ladder. At some point down the road, will one of the Ignite champions have a shot at maybe testing USF 2000 cars so they know what to look for in the coming years?
Yes, and I think Keith and I are still working through that, but the short answer is yes. And okay. I think there's a progression that takes us through the Ignite program. I do think there's an intermediate step in there, and whether that is the Lucas Oil Series or something different, but I think there is one intermediate step that we would also make part of this program. And that is exactly what we're looking to do, is take these super talented Ignite drivers. I think we have some means for a shootout, a way to really vet out those best drivers, and then we move them forward. And I think if we can do that every year, we'll end up having a super team, and we'll win quite a bit.
No, that's fantastic. And I think that's one thing that really sets Margay and Ignite apart from everybody else, because now you're growing talent, but you're growing talent out of the Midwest.
That's right. That's right. And I think we can grow talent out of the Midwest and beyond if it makes sense. And I think that Keith, as I mentioned, is doing a fantastic job in the Ignite series. And that series is really spreading. So that gives us a bigger farm club, if you will. But, right now we're very focused on the Midwest and the St. Louis area, certainly this year.
No, that's huge. And it's great for St. Louis, who is used to championship teams. Let's talk about you for a little bit, though. You're president of KHS Global. You also own Stelco Enterprises. So kind of managing time between these two and the race team's got to be tough.
Well, it's not as tough as you would think, because Keith has helped so much.
Right.
And he is doing so much of the management of the team. So, I do stay busy. We are in KHS Global is a business that is in the automotive catastrophe world. We take care of vehicles after hailstorms or after floods or perhaps quality spills at the factory level. So we are very much on call and a reactive business. Stelco is fairly easy. It's more in the real estate business. So I've been doing it for so long, and I've been doing it for over 30 years. So it becomes second nature. It becomes to manage.
It's just I just can't still wrap my head around the fact that we have somebody who's willing to bring up drivers just based on talent alone. And I've been in the sport over a decade, and it's hard to hear, but you're doing it with Keith, and I can't think of two better people to bring two talented drivers into the IndyCar paddock.
No, I agree with that. And I think this is going to be so much fun. And I think a lot of buzz will be generated around this program. And I think we'll garner a whole lot of interest as it develops. I think that be winning I think we have, when you're on the podium, your programs become a lot more legitimate and sustainable. And we have every podium, you know, every race. And I know that we have the drivers that will allow us to do it. I know we have the team in Cape Motorsports behind us that will make it possible. And, you know, I think this is a very sustainable program that we will carry on for years. And I don't know where it'll go next. And does it lead to even another tier of the progression on the road to Indy? Do we take on another team above the USF 2000? It's yet to be seen, but it's certainly something we're discussing.
Well, it's a step in the right direction, Scott, and I thank you for joining us. I'm excited to see what's going to happen next year with you guys, and hopefully you and I will run into each other at the kart tracks around the Midwest. Scott Blend, thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me, and have a wonderful day.
You as well. Coming up next on Inside Open Wheel, Braden Eaves joins us. He's got a new teammate with Exclusive Autosport, and he's coming back from one of the strangest crashes we've seen in Indy history.
This is Inside Open Wheel. Now, here's Jeremy Scott.
So, full disclosure, if you are listening to this now, the Road to Indy, TireRack.com Road to Indy E-Series is over. We know this. Okay, so we're going to talk a little bit about it, but it's going to be after all the festivities are done on Wednesday. Joining us now is the man second in points in that E-Series as of Tuesday, March 2nd, 2021, 4:52 Chicago time. It's Braden Eaves. Welcome to Inside Open. I've got to say, if there's one person that's really done well in this series, and really any E-Series we've had, it's you, because you seem to take to it like glue.
Yeah. It's been good fun. I mean, it's always a little bit dull in the off season when we're all just missing racing. So it's good to kind of get back into it, get our feet wet with some iRacing E-Series, racing against a lot of the people that we'll be racing against this season, and also a lot of new guys that are looking at maybe stepping into USF 2000. So it's been a good time.
And I've got to say, I really like this concept this year, because I've talked about this with Rob Howden. You know, he kind of told me this before it was all announced. And I love the concept of, you know, yeah, okay, you've got guys coming in from USF 2000, you know, Indy Pro 2000 and Indy Lights. But we're going to bring some of the Carters in from WKA, you know, the winner of that previous week's race, you know, gets to come in and race with you guys. So it gives them a springboard to have something to look forward to. And you also have the USF 2000 champion, Canadian Formula Ford champion racing with you guys as well. So it just brings so many people into such a diverse ladder system to just give it a shot, and they're still behind their computer.
Yeah, exactly. And it's good. It's really good fun. And they've got some good prizes out for the championship, actually a cash prize. So it gives us even more motivation to really go after it and put the work in to get as competitive as we can do. And it's been good. I've actually met some new people in the series, and it's all good fun. Me and my buddy Nikita have had some good times in practice, kind of doing some good battles, and yeah, it's been really fun.
Now you're going into your second season of Indy Pro 2000 championship racing. You had a good season up until the fall Indy race, correct?
Yep. It was okay. It was the triple header at IMS where I suffered my crash that took me out of the championship.
Yeah, let's talk about that real quick, because even I've watched that crash and kind of analyzed it. Our driver analyst, Charlie Antti, and I, we sat and watched it several times to try and figure it out. If you don't mind me asking, what exactly happened?
So basically, what happened was the stub axle failed. And when that happened, basically, there was nothing holding the wheel on anymore, because that's what the essentially the nut that keeps the wheel on is attached to. When that snapped, obviously, just the way the car was, I was in a fast right-hand corner, which is easy flat, but when the wheel came off, naturally, the car was already loaded, so it started spinning that direction, so the rear end kind of spun. The rear end went left, and the tire went underneath the car, and because you know, the direction the tire's spinning, the nature of it just ended up sending me flipping through the air. And it was just all in one swift motion. And I don't, the last thing I remember is, you know, the steering wheel snapping out of my hand. And then I don't really remember until I woke up in the ambulance. But yeah, it was crazy event. That's for sure.
That's always a good thing when you don't, when you can't remember what happened. You know, you just have one last memory, and you know, next thing you know, you're in a, you know, hospital or an ambulance. So honestly, one of the scariest crashes I think I've ever seen. But great to see you returning with Exclusive Autosport for this year. And you really showed your worth right from the get-go in Indy Pro 2000. So I'm thinking you're expecting to do the same once you guys get to Barber Motorsports Park.
Yeah, definitely. And I think even last year it was we didn't even show, I think, what we necessarily could have done. We had quite a bit of bad luck, I would say, just with the way they rescheduled things a little bit, ended up hurting us with they did some triple headers and it ended up changing the format a little bit, which didn't really play in my favor and got taken out. So I really feel like I could have had a good two or three wins where I only got one. So I was feeling really good, really strong. I felt like I could have easily battled for that championship with Stingray at the end of the year, but it just ends up going that way sometimes. But, you know, I can't complain because I'm back in a race car this year. And that's the important thing, is that I'm okay and that I can continue chasing my dream to IndyCar.
Exactly. And you're with a great team with Exclusive Autosport. And you just got a new teammate as well this past week.
Yep. So we just, Exclusive just announced Artem Petrov as my teammate, which should be really good. He was with Juncos Racing this year, which won the championship, so it should be really good. Maybe he can evaluate a little bit better the team. I mean, I think the team has just done a phenomenal job, but it's going to be good to have someone that's been inside, you know, the reigning champs team, just as a benchmark, and get his feedback on how everything is. But the team is just always on it at Exclusive Autosport. I've just been so happy with the environment that's there, and the way they work, the engineering is superb. I've just been really happy with the way the team has operated, and it's going to be good. We have a lot of testing coming up this coming month with me and my teammate Artem, as well as the USF 2000 guys. So I'm super excited for that.
Yeah, I was going to say, Artem was really fast last year with Juncos Racing, and he had a great teammate, Stingray Rob. Now you get to kind of expunge off that and see, you know, okay, what did you do last year to kind of get towards the front for this year?
Yeah, exactly. And last year it was a little bit more tough because I was it was a one car effort for Exclusive Autosport and Indy Pro 2000. So I didn't always have that benchmark. It's good to have two guys because you can change a little things on each car, and whatever is best, you end up going to one setup in the end. So that's always super useful. And I remember when I was with Cape Motorsports, we would end up doing that quite a bit, and it was always just so helpful to have that second car. So I think that's going to be a real, real good asset for us to have just another driver that's going to be very strong. I think we've got probably the strongest driver lineup, in my opinion.
Braden Neese running with Exclusive Autosport this year in the 2021 Indy Pro 2000 Championship. They are on Inside Open Wheel. You talk about Cape Motorsports and getting off to that strong start. You look at a repeat what happened in 2019 when you joined Cape Motorsports. You won five of the first seven races, basically set the world on fire and let your USF 2000 compatriots know you're not losing that championship without a fight.
No, for sure. And it's actually funny because actually right before my 2019 championship, I actually had two pretty large surgeries at about the same time of the year that I had my crash. So I was coming back off of a recovery and all that year as well. So it almost feels like a repeat. So hopefully that maybe we can have just something exactly like that. I feel really strong going into this year. And like I said, it's just going to be a great year, I feel. And especially with the way last year went with just the whole world in general, how it was just really not the best time in the world with COVID and how everything was shutting down. And everything is kind of looking on the up. Cases are down and everything is hopefully returning back to normal, soonish, whenever everything gets to the point where we can reopen everything and get back. So it's going to be a good year on all aspects.
Well, and take a look at the schedule. If everything holds out, it's a solid schedule for you. The only thing that you, I don't think you ran, did you run New Jersey in the Lucas Oil School or no?
No, I haven't run New Jersey. That's the only track that I haven't been to. You know, we might end up getting an in-season test day there. But, you know, it's the end of the season. So, you know, we'll kind of get to that when we get to that.
Yeah, you start off with a doubleheader, Barber and St. Pete. So that's going to be interesting. Then you got a little bit of a break till you're back on the IMS road course. So your first time on the road course. Have you been able to go out and test there since the incident?
No, I haven't. But historically, that's been probably my strongest track. Yeah. I actually swept the entire weekend there in USF 2000 with qualifying and lap record, as well as my first ever car race in F4 US Championship. I got second place behind Kyle Kirkwood. So that's definitely one of my strongest tracks historically, as well as when I was there for Chris Griffiths, the official test that they have before the season. On a normal season, obviously, they didn't have it this year, but it's been one of my strongest tracks. There's not too many opportunities to test there, but I think it should be definitely a good showing for us there.
Now, outside of racing, we know a lot of guys have some pretty interesting hobbies. What do you like to do just away from the track, away from the simulator?
You know, I like to, I've actually taken up boxing a little bit. I've been working with my trainer, Ryan Nussbaum. He's, you know, it started for fitness, but it's really just kind of turned into a hobby. I really enjoy boxing, and it's just it's the most incredible workout I've ever had. And it's just so fun. So it's really motivating to do and so rewarding when you get finished with a good boxing session. I haven't done too much sparring or anything, especially after, you know, my injury probably wouldn't be too good for me to be taking hits. But yeah, I've been doing some boxing. You know, I do some play some video games here and there. But yeah, it's not. Oh, I should say I will be doing a karting race, not this weekend, but the next weekend down in Ocala, Florida, for the United States Pro Kart Series. So that should be a lot of fun as well.
I was going to say, yeah, because I know a lot of drivers still do karting to kind of stay fit. But you're actually going to be competing down in Ocala. What kind? Now, is this like an invitational or is this, you know, the opening season for the U.S. Pro Karting Championship?
It's the first race of the season. Okay. So last year, actually, I returned to karting because we were supposed to have 2 weeks back to back at Mid-Ohio. And we got the first one underway, which was just road to Indy only. And then right after that, they ended up canceling the IndyCar weekend because of COVID. And I had 2 weeks, and Scusa had prepped the whole season basically in 2 weeks. So it was like a back to back weekends at Newcastle Motorsports Park. And I actually went back to karting for that. And came really close to getting the championship, which was amazing, really. You know, I don't race go-karts full-time anymore, so it's quite difficult to go back. And I actually picked up 2 wins there, ended up getting a penalty for one of them, which is kind of a, you know, it was a little bit of a not-so-good penalty, but it is what it is. And, yeah, go-karting is just so much fun. I love it because not only is the competition amazing, but I get to go back, and it's a little bit lower. It's lower key. You know, it's more one-on-one with my mechanic. It's a really good experience and much lower pressure. You know, you don't have if you do bad in 1 weekend, it's not like your championship is done or anything.
No, that's good. And it helps you out. You know, just get ready for, you know, the next race weekend nonetheless. Well, thanks for joining us, Braden. No fans want to follow you. How can they do so?
Yeah, so I'm on all the social media platforms, predominantly Twitter and Instagram at Braden Eaves, just my name, no spaces or anything, really easy to find, as well as Facebook, Braden Eaves Racing. I've been uploading vlogs onto my YouTube channel, and that's been kind of a big hit last year. So I'm trying to keep everyone, you know, more in touch with what goes on at the racetrack and get as much out to the fans as possible to, you know, stay up to date, not only with the results, but also, you know, how weekends go and all that. So, all the social media is at Braden Eaves. You can find me anywhere.
Well, Braden, good luck this season.
Yep. Thank you so much for having me.
Coming up next on Inside Open Wheels, IndyCar star Graham Rahal.
V This is Inside Open Wheel with Jeremy Scott.
Well, joining us is another IndyCar driver. Last week, we were lucky to have James Hinchcliffe. This week, we have Graham Rahal joining us, driver of the number 15 Honda for Rahal Letterman Lanigan. You have a lot of sponsors, so it's always great to see somebody who brings in a lot of the partnerships. But tell you what, Graham, I've noticed over the years you've been able to keep some of those partnerships, so that's always great to see.
Yeah, you know, we've tried to keep a very, you know, solid group of sponsors. We've been very fortunate to have them. You know, United Rentals has been with us a long time. Total has been with us for a while. Fifth Third, you know, the list goes on. I mean, a lot of these companies have, you know, been very committed, very loyal to our to our team, which is great. And, you know, ultimately that, I think that means that we've delivered for them too, which is good. But, yeah, we're excited to go into another season here, you know, and try to perform well and, you know, keep everybody happy.
And recently you were testing with, you know, United Rentals on your side pod. And what was cool is you had the paint scheme, much like your dad's last season, kind of in homage to that that last season he ran in kart.
Yep. Yeah. So we, you know, this year, I think you're going to see a couple that are going to look very similar, you know, to the to dad's old cars. And, you know, clearly we've it's our 30th year for our race team, and so I think they're trying to celebrate that. And you know, I thought that the United Rentals / Miller Lite car, you know, looked really good. And, you know, I think everybody also enjoys seeing it out on track as well.
And, you know, that's one thing. I was actually talking with a friend of mine. He was showing me around iRacing last night, and he was showing me some vintage paint schemes that he puts on his you know, his DW12. And frankly, it surprises me that we don't have a race specifically for throwback paint schemes.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I suppose you could, you know, kind of like NASCAR does. But, it, you know, it's not a bad concept. I think at this stage, though, you know, people get sensitive that if you do, oh, you're just copying them sort of thing, which is ridiculous. But that is the way that people think nowadays. You know, so, but yes, I think that it's, you know, it would be fun. You know, it's always been great to, you know, I feel like our team's done a good job having some different stuff, you know, coming up with some great, you know, different designs, and it served us well over the years. And so, you know, hopefully we can continue to do that. I do know that this year, you know, it's going to be something that we'll have a couple different options, I think, that might come out, and it should look really good.
Graham Rahal joins us on Inside Open Wheel, talking about his 2020 and 2021 season. Going to talk about a couple other things in here, but want to touch on 2020. Your teammate, Takuma Sato, wins another Indianapolis 500. What is it about your team that seems to be, real as of late especially, really good at Indianapolis?
Well, I think our team does a good job with the details. I feel like, you know, our engineering staff is very well aware of you know, of how to perform and how to be at our best there. I mean, it doesn't mean we are all the time, you know, that's for sure. There are times where we have not performed at our best there, but I thought last year we kind of hit on all cylinders, and, you know, and everything went well, so I was pleased with our performance. You know, it's now the goal is, how do you do it again this year? You have the target on your back. You finished first and third as a team in the Indy 500. You know, people take notice. I mean, but you also, you know, the hardest part of it all is to stay at the top, right? Mm-hmm. And so at the end of the day, we're going to try.
And I was going to say, too, people forget that, you know, Piggott also had a pretty good run. I mean, everybody sees that final crash, but it seemed like he had a handle for it being his only race on an oval that year.
He did. He did a good job. You know, and Spence is a great man, and, you know, it was nice to see him, you know, do well in general. Obviously, in the end, it ended up in a big crash, which was very unfortunate for him. But no, I you know, Spence is he's always done a great job behind the wheel, and you know, I feel like he's gonna, you know, I'm hopefully gets an opportunity this year. We'll see, you know, to come back and kind of prove himself again. But no, he's a great guy.
Going into this year, you're still the two-car team between you and Takuma Sato in the 30, but it's interesting because this is the first year I can think of in many years that the talent pool is so deep. You have rookies that can win at any given time with Romain Grosjean, Jimmy Johnson, and Scott McLaughlin. Most everybody is coming back with the same team. So it seems like that, you know, yeah, IndyCar is what it is, but the talent pool is just fantastic. And I almost think back to 93, you can compare the two grids.
Yeah, the talent pool's deep. You know, you look at McLaughlin, you know, Scotty's won, what, couple, at least, V8 Supercar Championships, which is one of the most competitive forms of racing in the world. Obviously, Jimmy, everybody knows Jimmy well. You know, there's a lot of great guys. There's a lot of talent, more talent maybe ever before, and also just a lot of guys, period. There's a lot of cars. You know, it looks like the car count for IndyCar overall is going up this year, which is a great trend. When you look at where other motorsports are going, it's typically a south. You know, see IndyCar going up is a great sign. And, you know, there's to be able to survive the pandemic as well as I think the sport did. As I said to somebody else in an interview I was doing 30 minutes ago, we're not out of the woods by any means. You know, there's going to be challenges ahead. But I do think that everybody's done a great job, you know, battling through it to this stage.
And under the first year of Roger Penske ownership, I think the IndyCar is probably in its best foothold than it has been in previous years. And that's not, you know, saying anything about the previous ownerships with IndyCar, previous CEOs, but having somebody who's been in the sport as long as he has and knows how to move the sport as he has, I think that this is a great sign for the growth of the series.
Big time. Big time. Great sign. I think IndyCar is, you know, poised to have, you know, a great future with those with the Penske family and their involvement and their ownership. So definitely good stuff ahead.
Let's talk about a couple of things that you have outside of motorsports. Recently, you opened up a new Ducati dealership in Indianapolis with your family. What was the reason behind that?
Well, you know, I always I've always been a big Ducati fan.
Okay.
Since I was a little kid, you know, Ducati's really rang home with me. It's something I loved. And you know, I've been able to be able to enjoy them and collect some over the years. And so for me, you know, just being a Ducati freak, when the opportunity came, the local dealer here decided to, you know, shut his operation down. And it just created an opportunity for us to jump in and try to do it. And, you know, I feel like with the performance facility that we have as well, you know, those two complement each other very well. You know, I would say that our typical client is probably a very similar demographic between those two. And so I think that that's going to serve well for us as well.
And I've got to say, I've been watching on your Twitter some of the cars that you've been pumping out of Grand Marais Hall Performance over the past year. And even with the downturn in the economy, you're still constantly getting cars in there for all sorts of performance mods.
Yeah, it's been awesome. Yeah, we had our greatest, you know, our biggest year ever last year, and you know, I'm proud and fortunate to be able to say that. I think our guys did a tremendous job, my staff, and you know, just pushing the limits, you know, every day, trying to be at our best. And you know, sometimes there's teething pains. My staff is typically very young people, and so because of that, you know, youth, it does sometimes take a little bit of pushing to get there. But everybody did a great job, and, you know, we did have a tremendous amount of growth. And this year started off, you know, we're poised to have an even better year in 2021. So hopefully we can keep this up. It's been a lot of fun for me. Like I said, these things kind of started as a passion project that have grown into, you know, fairly sizable businesses that we're a part of. And, you know, I'm fortunate and definitely love it. I mean, that's where it starts, though, first. Is, you know, everything that we're involved in started with love first. You know, it's a passion for me. You know, my wife, she's kind enough to let me do this and takes a lot of my life away, unfortunately. It takes a lot of time commitment for me to be able to be good at it and to run these businesses as well as racing. But I think for us, it's been a lot of fun.
Well, it helps to be married to somebody who knows the sport as well as both you and your wife, Courtney, do. So that's got to make life a little bit easier for both of you.
Well, for sure. Court, you know, Court's been great. She knows, you know, she knows what it's all about. You know, she's lived it maybe even to a more extreme level, you know, than me, as far as just the demands and the way that it all works. You know, it's definitely with the NHRA schedule when she was racing, you know, that's a pretty, pretty treacherous schedule, just long, very long, drawn out years, starting February, typically end in November. I mean, that's a long year. So she gets what the workload is all about and, you know, the time and the commitment it takes to be good at it. So that definitely helps. You know, it was nice when we first met. It was like the first time ever I didn't have to explain exactly how it all went around. So it's definitely a positive.
Has your father-in-law ever come to you? I mean, we know that he's talked to you about maybe getting in a Top Fuel or funny car, but have you seriously explored it and maybe thought about doing a couple runs down the drag strip?
No, it's not for me. It's not for me. You know, I always joke, you know, just stay in my lane and do my thing. And, you know, and I think it's good for us too. You know, I don't think that, you know, from a family perspective, we're all very competitive people. And so, you know, for me, I don't think I necessarily need to be going into drag racing anytime soon. I do, you know, I love to go. I love to support the family. Obviously, John's still racing, Robert, you know, Britt's out there who, you know, I'm very close with. So I want to see her do well. And my brother-in-law, Dan, you know, works on the team, and Ashley's out. So, as you can tell, the whole family, you know, pretty much works there. And so it's exciting for us to be able to go and support them and cheer them on. But I don't think that the Ray Halls need to get involved in drag racing anytime soon.
Let's get back to your Grand Marais Hall performance. I know that you also have a lot of cars and coffee, and it seems like it's well attended, especially with all the events that go on in Circle City related to cars.
Well, when we were pretty much unrestricted, and what I mean by that is just, you know, able to go out and have cars and coffees and all that stuff and not feel like we had to be monitored, you know, every step of the way. Yes, I mean, we would get, you know, 400 plus cars there. And, you know, I'm excited that right now we, you know, with Ducati as well, we're going to introduce Ducks and Donuts. And,
oh, that's awesome.
You know, be able to incorporate the Ducati, not only Ducatis, but just motorcycle guys. You know, motorcycle guys and gals come out, particularly gals, actually. That's like the biggest thing we're trying to push at our Ducati franchises with the Scrambler line and everything else. We get some great products for girls. And so, you know, try to get some girls on the bikes and enjoy them as well is a big target for us. So as we go towards, you know, 2021 and now into the season where people are coming out looking for bikes and stuff like that, cars and coffee, Ducks and Donuts, all that stuff, I think will be a really great addition to what we're doing.
And another thing that you're also doing, I think you're still doing it, is the United, it's almost like a United States track tour where you do a different track day at a different facility around the country. Is that still going on?
Yeah, so we do, you know, basically a GRP customer only track day. And so it's a package that we sell. We limit the people, 20, 25 people maximum. But we hit up, you know, 9 different tracks a year or 9 different days. So we'll go up to Wisconsin, obviously, and go to Road America. We're going to go to Mid Ohio. We're going to go down to Alabama to go to Barber. We'll go to Autobahn Country Club and do the full track up there in Chicago. NCM down in Bowling Green. So, you know, we've got some great, great tracks that we're going to go to. We'd love, you know, at some point to get Indianapolis on there, but we haven't been able to get approval from RP just yet, but hopefully we'll be able to work them over and try to make something happen.
Well, you got a lot going on and everybody knows your Twitter handle, but what are some of the other social media channels that they can follow, you know, Grand Marais Hall Performance or Ducati Indianapolis, or find out more about this track day program?
Yeah, so, you know, our track day program, everything's on our website. If you go to GrahamRayHallPerformance.com, it's on there. If you email sales@GrahamRayHallPerformance.com, if you're interested in taking part in that, that's one way. As far as social, obviously, mine's just, you know, Graham Ray Hall on all forms. The performance facility is Graham Ray Hall Performance on Instagram and Facebook. And then on Twitter, I think it's @GRPerf. PERF, and Ray Hall Ducati is everything for Ducati. So, no, I do appreciate that opportunity to say them all. I know it's a little long, but we're excited. I mean, we're trying to really, you know, bring, look, we're gearheads. I'm a gearhead, mm-hmm. Period. Outside of race, just a gearhead. So, you know, trying to bring that all together and make it so that, so fellow gearheads can enjoy like we do.
No, it's great to see. And as somebody who's a gearhead myself, yeah, I appreciate it. Graham Ray Hall, thanks for joining us. Good luck this season.
Sounds good. Thank you.
And coming up on next week's program, we have Ian Rodriguez. He returns to the United States after running select USF 2000 races a couple of seasons ago. And with what's looking like a stacked FR America's field, the Guatemalan looks set to take his Newman Wachs Honda Ligier to the front this season. We'll chat with him. And speaking of FR Americas, we'll have an update from their test with F4 at VIR, which is going to be here in a couple of days. So for Scott Blend, Braden East, Phil Krause, and Graham Rahal, I'm Jeremy Scott. We thank you for listening to Inside Open Wheel. We'll see you next week. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter for the latest news throughout the United States Open Wheel Ladder System. Inside Open Wheel is a production of Trackout Multimedia.